Every family has an origin story, one passed down through the generations. Mine happens to be a mystery involving my great-great-grandmother left behind in Sicily. I'm Joe Piazza, and my new podcast will transport you to the gorgeous island of Sicily as I trace my roots back through a whodunit for the ages. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same seven questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same seven questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season three of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Seven questions, limitless answers.
Hello, from Wonder Media Network, I'm Jenny Kaplan, host of Womanica, a daily podcast that introduces you to the fascinating lives women history has forgotten. We've always been intrigued by stories of disappearances, whether it's a fraudster from the 17th century who kept evading the authorities, or a novelist who taunted the Nazis and faked her own death. We all want to know, what happened next? To find out, listen to Womanica on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey there, I'm Dr. Maya Shunker, and I'm a scientist who studies human behavior. Many of us have experienced a moment in our lives that changes everything, that instantly divides our life into a before and an after. On my podcast, A Slight Change of Plans, I talk to people about navigating these moments. Their stories are full of candor and hard-won wisdom. And you'll hear from scientists who teach us how we can be more resilient in the face of change. Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
My name is Phyllis Smith, and I played Phyllis Lappin Vance.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back, one and all, to The Office Deep Dive. I am your host, Brian Baumgartner, and I am so excited to present to you my interview with Phyllis Smith. And guys, this episode is truly one of my favorites ever. Not only because Phyllis is obviously wonderful, but because I finally got to have my Oprah moment. Now, here's what happened. As some of you may know, Phyllis did not start out as an actor. No, Phyllis was actually Allison's casting associate on The Office, but she was just so perfect that Greg Daniels and Ken Kwapis decided to cast her. And obviously, she went on to be an incredible part of our ensemble. So Phyllis and Allison had worked together many years, become very, very close friends, but they don't get to see each other very often these days. So when I was going to be interviewing Phyllis, I said to Allison, hey, Allison, why don't you come in? You guys can talk about casting, and then I can talk with Phyllis about, you know, her progression through the show. But let's surprise her. Don't tell Phyllis that you're going to be there. And as you will hear right now, it was just the best moment. So, I'm so excited. Let's roll the tape.
Bubble and squeak, I love it. Bubble and squeak, I know. Bubble and squeak, I cook it every morning, left over from the night before.
I'm so excited for Phyllis
Me
to
too.
Come in and see you.
Where is she?
She's out there. She just doesn't know that you're here.
Okay.
Are we good? Okay. She's going to walk through that door. I love this.
Skinny Phyllis, what's the deal? I know. Talking about you.
Surprise!
Yeah.
Are you okay?
Yeah. Yeah. Hi, Brian.
I love it. How are you?
Good.
So good to
Better
see you.
Better now. Yes. Oh, my goodness.
Hi, Phil.
Ay, ay, ay. Hello.
Ask her most everything. Yeah.
No, ask her.
So this is just to tell you what's going on. So I had my thing. I've interviewed Allison. We've talked about casting the entire show. But I said to her, let's leave off Phyllis, because I wanted you to come in and you guys to be able to have a conversation together. So when did you guys meet?
Oh, God. Okay. The first pilot we worked on together was called 1973.
Right.
Was it 1973 at those offices across from Universal?
Right.
And we cast James Franco and Ben Foster in a really bad sitcom.
We were in that trailer.
Oh, we were in the trailer. We were in the trailer first.
On NBC's lot.
That's right. And that was...
Because Jessica
Walter screamed at her agent for sending her to the wrong place. And we were like hiding behind the desk. Yeah. Like, oh my God.
We're like, what's
Don't
going
go
on?
Out there. She's yelling at her agent. it was in a terrible trailer. And it was during like El Nino, and our trailer, everything was soaked. Everything was soaked. They had terrible rain. There were leaks.
And from my point of view, I had been working with Alan Hochberg.
Yes.
And the day that was my last day with him on I went across the hall to say goodbye. Mm-hmm. And that's when whose office they said, oh, Allison Joe.
I think Roe Diamond did.
Yeah. And I said, do you know of anybody who's looking for a casting associate? Mm-hmm. And they said, oh, yeah, Allison Jones is.
Yeah.
And so then I contacted you, and then I had an interview on Monday, and you started me on Wednesday.
Yes, right. And I remember Steve Jacobs, who's another casting director, said, if you want someone to whip you into shape, hire this gal.
No.
No, he did.
He did not.
What? So what year is this?
1998 or 7. 98, probably.
98 or 97.
Because then we went on to do some...
like Freaks and Geeks. We did other...
Yeah, but before that, we did Roswell, which was hellacious.
Yes.
We call that the lowest point of both of our lives. It was just hellacious because it was for a network that needed beautiful people. I told you that's where Heath Ledger wasn't good looking enough for Fox.
Right. And Ian Somerhalder. Remember?
Oh, Ian Somerhalder.
Yeah.
Yelled at me.
Yelled at you because you didn't read
too fast. Yes. We were shocked. Anyway, bless him.
You got yelled at for reading too fast with the actor in the room?
Oh, and I felt terrible, but yeah, he yelled at me right after the audition.
He had to have
right
some excuse, though. So.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I've never done that.
Yeah.
I should try that. Did he get the job?
That, like, traumatized me, so I tried to slow it down after that.
So you worked together from 97, 98 through 2003,
yeah,
the whole time?
Yeah, because you still worked through the first episodes of The Office, didn't you?
I worked till the mid-second season.
Right, because you guys weren't getting paid anything.
Right.
And we didn't know if we were getting a pickup or not.
Yeah, ever.
So I remained in casting. Mm-hmm. Kate remained working in the restaurant.
Kate Mantellini.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we all just held on.
So what did you do in casting? Were you primarily reading or were you...
Allison would give me her ideas and we'd go through, at that time in casting, we used to get real pictures and resumes.
I said that to Brian too,
and we would have a wall stacked full of, so I had to separate all those into different, you know, and whatever Allison wanted me to do, I did it and set up the appointments, make sure, trying to confirm actors.
You were a tough one, though, because you would say, you have to call me back and confirm that the confirmation is actually real.
Right.
Yeah.
Not just.
Tough.
Yeah. I remember that one time.
Very organized.
We had that one kid that we had given out an appointment, and it was for a bad movie. It was a movie that we did. And it was with Creative or a big agency.
Yeah.
I don't remember the agency, but I had given out all the appointments, waited approximately a week or so to confirm. Finally, I hadn't heard anything, so I called, and he still hadn't given the appointments out, and the session was like, you know, a couple days away.
Yeah.
So what I did is I proceeded to call the managers of everybody, and all of a sudden, this kid calls me, and he goes, what do you think you're doing?
Ugh.
And I said, well, I'm doing the work that you should have been doing.
Yes.
And he goes, how dare you? And I said, well, you know what? Let me tell you something. I said, when I call you, you say hello, because he was so befuddled. When I give you the information, you call me back with a confirmation. And when we go to hang up, you say goodbye. You just don't drop the phone. And you, I remember I was yelling at this point. I turn around and Allison's standing there. She goes, who are you talking to? Yeah.
So you did casting for 19 years?
Yes.
Is that right?
Approximately, yeah.
So someone found this quote that you said, for 19 years, that's what I did. I examined the character, the truth of it, and I think that I didn't know it at the time, but I was learning.
I don't remember saying that.
Does that sound right?
Well, what I have said in various interviews is that I was probably honing a craft that I didn't know I was honing. It was never in the forefront of my mind. And I can honestly say I never thought that I would be an actor. You know, it was never something I went, oh, I wonder if there's a role for me. At one point, I was trying to get into commercials and
like acting commercials?
Yeah. And then life changed and I ended up, well, you know how I got into casting, right? Do you know that?
How did you get into casting?
I don't know that.
Well, I was working as a receptionist in an aerospace defense company in Sherman Oaks. A friend of mine called who had worked for Stu Billett Productions on a court show. And they said, Phyllis, they need a mousy woman for a court show. And I said, oh, man. I didn't want to, I wasn't actively auditioning or going out. I was being a receptionist. And I had 1 hour for lunch. I had to go over the hill to do this audition. And in the process, at this time, this was the olden days, we wore nylons. And I went to the bathroom. And as I was pulling them up, I ripped a huge hole. My entire knee was out of my nylon. So I walked into the audition and I said, excuse me, are you looking for mousy or lifted up my skirt or tacky? And so we ended up in a conversation, and I wasn't mousy enough to be a mousy woman.
But, shocking.
But in the course of the conversation, I said, you know, I think I might be good in casting. And about a year later, she called me, and that's how I ended up. And I was at the lowest. I mean,
oh, yeah.
I had to do everything that nobody else wanted to do. I was there doing
it. What was your pay?
It was like $300 a week or something.
My first job was $250 a week, and I was thrilled. But it would have been about 1983. What would yours have been?
Probably in late 80s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I was a little bit earlier, but $250 a week was huge.
Yeah.
Yep.
So that's how I ended up in the casting, and then it just...
Now it's a thing people want to do, shockingly. We just sort of ended up in it.
Yeah. Did you feel the casting process of casting The Office was different than any other show that you had done before?
I think it was because the material was different from the other shows. It was a give and take, and it was the normal,
getting a joke. Yeah.
You know, ta-da-da. Mm-hmm. And this was completely a different style.
We used to say, if you think you're doing too little, you're still doing too much.
Right. Because we had to like
less is
really
more was every direction to give everybody.
Pull it down.
Yeah. I have the original audition I have for Leslie in my office. I left the camera running by mistake, and it shows me explaining the genre of the show and how it's going to be a fake documentary. And I think you walk by in the background, by the way. And I'm, you know, just saying, and there's poor Leslie going, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I was just kept repeating, it's less is more. It has to feel like it's a documentary, like in the British show, blah, 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 blah. But that was what we stressed.
Was there someone that you remember fighting for that was cast or wasn't cast?
You were in the rooms because you were reading with these actors.
Right.
So you had a better feel for it.
But you read with them.
I read with them until Ken Kwapis came up to me and said, could you let Phyllis read because I think she'd be good in the show.
I didn't know any of that.
We're sort of saying the
on.
Same thing. I mean, she got it because Ken thought she was good, but she said, let Phyllis read. Said, oh, my God, that's a great idea. So Phyllis then went in and started reading with all the actors, and she was great.
I remember being scared, though.
I'm sure you were scared. I think
because
I was scared for
you. Because I didn't want to screw it up. I didn't know he was auditioning you.
Yeah, no, yeah.
But I was frightened because I wanted to do a good job for the actors.
Yeah, yeah.
And I read with Rain, and then another time I read with Krasinski, and I remember when I read with him, I thought, oh, that's
yeah.
the one.
Yeah.
yeah. yeah. It just felt right.
Right.
I remember John sitting out in the reception area.
Yes.
And you had put him on tape like the first day.
Yes. He was put on tape in New York. I met him on a general, remember? We had the same man's J. Crew sweater on. I remember thinking, oh, shit, I hope he doesn't notice. It's also a... His was brown, mine was green.
It's so funny.
Yeah.
Well, they were all sitting there. And then the second day, he didn't get called back in right away. And he just was, like, very nervous. And he later had told me he thought it was because he didn't do... well, the first day,
yes,
and in reality, it was the reverse that I think he had already
gotten
made
it.
An
yeah.
impression, and mm-hmm. and I remember BJ sitting out there, just he looked like he was petrified.
Yeah,
I didn't know him. I didn't know his personality.
Now that's just the way he looks.
I know, yeah. But at the time, he looked like, and he didn't engage with people. He didn't talk or
right.
And I thought, oh, what's up with him? You know, but then I realized that it was part of his.
My big fear in all the casting situations when you mix and match is, oh my God, how bad are they going to feel if they don't get called back in? I hate that.
Right, and then Steve.
Steve came in day two because he
was still
whatever
on.
It was, he was still hooked into the other NBC show. So
right.
they let him come in on the second day.
What was your impression of Steve?
I thought he was brilliant, even, you know, right off the bat.
I told him that for me, it was a toss up because Odenkirk was so cool and so good.
Oh, yeah.
But then you said that when I was watching the tape of Steve.
Who was the other guy that?
Well, there was also Paul F. Tompkins and really good people that were testing. But it came down to between Odenkirk and Carell.
But it would have been a totally different
yeah.
Michael with Odenkirk. You know?
But you had said to me that when I was watching the monitor, watching Steve's test, and I was doubled over with laughter, and Greg noticed that.
Yeah.
You always thought that was
because you
a
were
good
having
indication.
A hard time.
Yes,
you're
yes.
having a hard time keeping it.
Oh my God! Yes.
Yeah. So,
that's awesome. What So you knew way before that they were considering that Ken was considering Phyllis.
Oh no, like an hour before.
Oh, an hour before.
We were
before.
Reading that day and said, could you just switch? You do the camera, you do this, let Phyllis read.
And I was at the coffee trying to make sure everything was ready with the coffee. Mm-hmm. And Ken came up and he said, Phyllis, I want you to read the character of Pam today. And I went, okay. So I thought, well, maybe one of the Pams is going to be late, or I didn't know the why of it.
Yeah.
And then I was nervous because I didn't know that you knew. And I was like concerned that I was going to be doing something out of line for my job, you know. And so you knew all along.
I did.
And no one really ever came to me. Wardrobe was actually the first one who called. And said, I understand you're playing the character of Phyllis. And I went, yes, I am.
So you didn't get to tell her that she had been cast.
No, not for years.
No, but you didn't get to tell her that she had been cast.
I guess Wardrobe told
Wardrobe.
You first.
Wardrobe really told me first.
I think I was in on it and didn't tell her.
Right.
Do you remember the day that you came in?
Yes.
And, to our office.
No, to the producer session.
Oh, right.
We were over... where we shot the first, and we had to go to get the actors, we had to go about a block and a half within the building to bring them back to the little where we were recording. And so as a result, the session, she ran the sessions on time. You didn't sit when you went to Allison's
He brought this up. Yeah.
Yeah. You went in. But for some reason that day, we were behind. We were really behind.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I remember Leslie had another audition to go to. Mm-hmm. So we said, go ahead, go to your audition and come back. So he went to his audition. Yeah. He came back. He fought the traffic, and he was in a real crummy mood when he came in, and it must have worked.
I know. Yeah.
Yeah. And you...
remember when Greg jumped out the window?
That's exactly what I was going to say to you. I was just going to say that to you.
Wait, tell me. Go ahead.
In a casting session, Nancy Perkins was there, and she had the funniest comeback.
Oh, yeah, I love Nancy Perkins.
Yeah.
Was it at the beginning before the lunch hour? Or
we all had to sit at a conference table in that the room that you didn't have to go into when you read. You didn't see, but that's where we cast everybody else.
And there was a lull. And all of a sudden, Greg just gets up and jumps out this window.
He opened the window and jumped out the window.
And fortunately, the window was close to the ground.
Yeah.
So.
Okay.
And then Nancy Perkins, in a thick Boston accent, said, oh, my God, I've heard of producers wanting to jump out the window before, but he just did it. Yeah.
And we all just looked at each other.
He needed to get a sweater in his car or something.
I don't know why he did it, but it was funny. We just looked at each other.
He also used to graph the qualities of actors. He had a graph, and he would like put what he needed and what he saw, and he would literally graph the qualities of actors.
Does he have that?
He has I may have that.
Oh.
He had a very scientific mind when it came to things like that, and that, of course, drove me nuts. But he would always say that he was less instinct and more thinking about it. Who would you put with this, and who would go with that? If you had these two people, who would be this person? He thought about it very carefully, and it certainly worked on The Office. But jumping out the window, Nancy and I were very amused by.
Nancy was perfect.
She was, oh my God. He jumped out the window.
And now we know that's kind of normal, but at the time.
Well, with Greg, yes.
Yeah. Well, at the time,
his comeback was terrific. Yeah. Right? I've heard of producers wanting to jump out the window before. But.
Well, it's interesting because of you talking about that on the casting side, because what we've been told by some of the writers was one of the exercises that they did, they called them unlikely duos or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone's name would be on the wall, right? So Kevin and Phyllis and Michael and Dwight.
Oh, wow.
And, mm-hmm. and one of their exercises was take two characters that you wouldn't
put together
and let's put them together and then have some story about that.
Interesting.
Yeah. But it's interesting from the casting perspective, from the beginning, wanting to
he does. That's at least how he did it with The Office. Yeah. He would ask everybody, would you rather have this person or this person? And then if you have this person, would you rather have this person or this person? But he was a very pensive and thoughtful person that way. And those are the people that we've had the privilege to work for, Mitch Hurwitz and Judd Apatow and Paul Feig. They do think about things in a different way to make the whole greater than the sum of its parts. They all have strange ways and interesting ways of thinking. I call it comedy Asperger's. Sorry.
That's good.
Mitch, remember?
Yes. He was great.
Why do you think the two of you worked so well together?
Kind of laid back and we enjoyed it. Yeah.
Right.
We had a lot of laughs.
And I truly, I'm not just saying this because she's sitting here. She can remember every actor that not only opened their mouth to her, but walked in, walked through the room.
No.
She has, and she was never afraid to go out and find new talent. She just had an eye. She had an eye for somebody that was unique and different and,
So did you, though. A little anecdote. We cast a show called Spin City when it was it Spin City or Battery Park that you met Dakota Fanning on when she was six?
Yeah.
We were at Radford, and Phyllis was reading kids for a one-line role on a Christmas episode or something.
Mm-hmm.
And Phyllis said, Allison, I read this girl, but come on in and we'll read her again because you've never seen anything like this. And it was six-year-old Dakota Fanning reading one line about being an orphan or something.
Right.
And Phyllis literally was like, I've never seen anything like it.
She was wonderful.
She was amazing.
Yeah.
So Dakota Fanning and Shia LaBeouf go down for me as the best child actors I've ever seen.
Wow. When you guys walked in and you saw each other, what is it about the history between you two that feels so special?
We just love each other.
We just love each other, and she's hilarious, and we had a lot of good laughs.
We did. We had a lot of good, we enjoyed it.
And love actors. And basically a great, just a great, like, ultimately, who cares? So let's just have fun. Yeah. Plus, she's a dear person, and we worked together for a long time, and she always knew my sisters and stuff.
Ditto.
My brothers, yeah.
Ditto.
Yeah.
When we come back, we're going to kick Allison out. And Phyllis and I, we're going to sit down for a chat together.
Grand Canyon University, an affordable private Christian university, is one of the largest and fastest growing universities in the country, offering more than 270 programs online. In addition to federal grants and aid, GCU's online students received nearly $130 million in institutional scholarships in 2022. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu/myoffer to see the scholarships you may qualify for.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV true crime podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
iHeart Podcast Update. This week on your free iHeartRadio app.
Fodor's Guide to Espionage, a 60s-era spy story of the world's first and greatest travel writer, Eugene Fodor, as he jet-sets around the globe. Tongue Unbroken, Season 2. This podcast explores complex concepts of identity, resilience, erasure, and genocide. Table for Two, Season 2. Think of the show as a deconstructed Oscar party in podcast form. Each episode takes place over the romance of a meal and feels like you're seated next to a different guest at that dinner. Hear these podcasts and more on your free iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's a hard time for hiring, so you need a hiring partner built for hard times. That's Indeed. If you're hiring, you need Indeed, because Indeed is the hiring partner where you can attract, interview, and hire all in one place. And Indeed is the only job site where you're guaranteed to find quality applications that meet your must-have requirements or else you don't pay. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites hoping to find candidates with the right skills, you need one hiring partner that can help you do it all. Indeed partners with you on every step of the hiring process. Find great talent through time-saving tools like Indeed Instant Match, assessments, and virtual interviews. With Instant Match, as soon as you sponsor a post, you get a short list of quality candidates with resumes on Indeed that match your job description, and you can invite them to apply right away. Plus, you only pay for quality applications that meet your must-have requirements. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring right now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/office deep dive. Offer valid through March 31st. Go to Indeed.com/OfficeDeepDive to claim your $75 credit before March 31st. Indeed.com/OfficeDeepDive. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Hi, Phil.
Hi, Kev. That's what you've been in my life for so long, Bri.
I know. Well, so we sort of talked about, I think it's fascinating that you were casting all of these shows and never had a thought.
I can honestly say that that was not, I thought that ship had sailed. And so, I don't know, it was just I'm meant to be, and it's changed my life completely.
Yeah.
Completely. In a good way. You know?
Did you have any training?
No. I Alan Hochberg, who I worked for on Dr. Quinn Medicine Woman, I worked with him for about 6 years, 6 or 7 years. And he actually taught me how to hold the pair of sides and read with an actor. And so he was instrumental in helping me to learn how to read with an actor and treat an actor. And then when Allison, she was another person who really, a lot of casting directors did not get involved when they read with actors, as you know. But Allison really gave her all when she read with people. So again, being in the room and watching her interact with the actor and watching the actors, I don't know.
Well, it's funny because I've heard of people, I never did this, but I've heard of actors who will find an in with a casting director to be the person who reads with actors.
Oh, yeah, that used to happen all the time.
Right, because they wanted to see, you know, actors' performances and be privy to the conversations about why that person got cast and that person got cast. Mm-hmm. It always seemed like kind of a smart thing, mm-hmm. you know, to be able to go in and hear what people were talking about or what they were responding to, or you as an actor learning tips from that. And it's so fascinating that you were doing that for 19 years.
But I didn't.
But you weren't even trying. It just came in.
Right. It wasn't my job at that time was to do the best that I could for the actor to get the job or to cipher out who shouldn't be there and who should be there, you know. But it turned out okay.
So you got a call from wardrobe. So at this point, you have no idea.
I just thought it was odd that day that Ken came to me. I really felt nervous because I didn't want to step on Allison's toes. I think there was a fax that came through that had the character of Phyllis there, but I didn't want to even believe that it was going to be a possibility. And as soon as wardrobe calls, then because nobody ever came and said, hey, do you want to be in the show?
Right.
And
so you never really auditioned?
No, I guess I auditioned, but didn't know I was auditioning, which is another thank you because I would have been completely, if I was nervous enough wanting to do a good job for the people I was reading with, had I known he was actually watching me. But you know what? They did use a tape of my reading at the network. One of the tapes that they presented, I was reading with someone, so it was covered in the long run. But I didn't know any of that at the time.
That is so amazing. I think that is like best story ever.
I think some actors think, you know, not our group of people, but I run across other people sometime and if they hear this story, they go, oh, you know, they're kind of a little bit like, well, look, I studied it, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And so they're not too thrilled with it.
Right. Well, I think it speaks to what, you know, the producers and Greg and Ben and Ricky and Steven were looking for in this, that they were really looking for normal people.
Yeah.
Ordinary normal, people.
Not known faces in any way, shape, or form. And just
people that go to an office, you know?
Yeah. I think that potentially Phyllis and Kevin were the butt of a lot of jokes.
We were
definitely the butt of a lot of, yeah, maybe not all, but a lot. How was that for you?
Did I take offense to that or anything?
Yeah.
No. I have to say, though, when they wanted me to carry Angela on my back in the finale, that I thought, okay, that's a little much.
Right.
First of all, physically, wasn't sure how it was going to play out. But then they took care of it and it all, you know, with the stunts and boards and stuff like that.
Right.
And then I actually carried her like once or twice down the aisle, but that was just a tinge to my feeling. Well, that's a little bit over the.
Yeah. I certainly had some of those things as well. I think that I was told at some point, I think it was either season 7 or season 8. We were talking about going forward without Steve, and I was talking to some of the higher ups, and they said, well, we can't lose Kevin because now that Michael's gone, we have nobody else to do really, really stupid things. So, like,
that's what they were told you.
Yeah. Because I started doing a ton of the physical stuff too.
And right.
There was oil in the warehouse and slipping around and doing all this stuff. And I remember, and like rain on my back on the filing cabinet, like giving me a massage. And there were a few times I went to them and I was like, okay, guys, I am not a cartoon character. There are physical limitations to what I can do. So you can't just write anything and to go, oh, well, yeah, he can do that. Of course. Yeah.
I was always grateful to get a line. That'd be like you get a script and you start thumbing through it to say, oh, wow, I've got 3, 4. So, yeah, I was grateful to get a line.
Did you communicate much with the writers about
the
character?
I never did. I didn't know I didn't know that if that was permissible. I hadn't been in those shoes before as an actor. So whatever they gave me, I was glad I got, and, you know, was more unhappy when I didn't get something than what I did get.
Right. Do you feel like there were things specific to you that influenced the character of Phyllis?
Golly. I think, well, with my personality, I sometimes, like, I can be sarcastic, you know, in a sweet way. And so I must have done that to somebody somewhere along the line, and they kind of picked up on it. Are these the questions I should be asking when I have a character?
No.
I mean, as in creating a character, this is.
No, I think it's more. You know, for me, I'm just wondering, because I don't know. The answer is, like, did you have, you know, whether you saw something in yourself that sort of came through?
I just tried to do it from my gut, because I didn't have anything else to work from. So if I got the line, I would try to deliver it a couple of different ways with a different feeling. And like I said, I never really thought of like a backstory for Phyllis. I never had the knowledge to do that or the tools to do that. I just went from my gut, and she just, and however people perceived her, then all of a sudden that's what she'd be given. And I always loved my interactions with Michael because we were so competitive in high school and, you know.
Right. But then I think another significant would be Angela.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That was a perfect, you know, the fact that I was so much larger than she was, but she tried to rule me, and I completely, what is the word? Acquiesced to what she wanted until I got to the point that I couldn't stand her, you know.
Right.
And that's kind of the way I do in life. I take, and then all of a sudden I blow up, so. So
it is like you.
Yes, it is like me.
It is like you. Yeah.
Look, it took all that time to get to that point.
But luckily for Phyllis, you walked in on Angela and Dwight.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Which shifted
the whole balance of power. I was the one in charge then. Right.
Right. I mean, that must have been fun.
Oh, it was
play.
The best.
Yeah.
Like when I swooped everything off the desk, that wasn't, nobody told me to do that. I just did it. Yeah. I enjoyed the arc of Angela being my nemesis to my becoming her nemesis.
You're right.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in L.A. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
iHeart Podcast Update. This week on your free iHeartRadio app. Fodor's Guide to Espionage. A 60s-era spy story of the world's first and greatest travel writer, Eugene Fodor, as he jet sets around the globe. Tongue Unbroken, Season 2. This podcast explores complex concepts of identity, resilience, erasure, and genocide. Table for Two, Season 2. Think of the show as a deconstructed Oscar party in podcast form. Each episode takes place over the romance of a meal and feels like you're seated next to a different guest at that dinner. Hear these podcasts and more on your free iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because God, I can't stay where I am like I am where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how. I don't know where. I don't know what. God, if you show me. God, if you tell me. God, if, no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Right. Oh, I didn't think about it like that before, but right. That's exactly what happened. Do you have any favorite episodes?
Oh, there's so many, though. That, I mean, there's moments, I think I've talked about one before, where Dwight and Michael, they bump chest and they go, we did it. And then they go, what'd we do? I don't know. It's just a stupid little, but it kind of like encapsulates the whole feeling of the office is like they're doing something and then what we do, you know.
Yeah.
Favorite episodes that I've, you know, when of course my wedding, and I love the scene that you and I did together when I was in charge of trying and you came in, you wanted money. That was really one of the first scenes that I ever had one-on-one with you. And it felt really real. I enjoyed our interview. I think I said something to you that day
Yeah.
After the scene.
Yeah. It, for me, whoever we were paired off with on that particular day or episode or whatever, it was generally exciting.
Yeah. A good deal. I love the episode where Dwight kind of, I hurt my back at the disco and he takes and treats me as if I'm a farm animal.
Do you remember, not, I mean, not necessarily where you were or what, but hearing that Steve was going to leave?
Oh, man, that was the, it was like somebody punched you in the stomach, you know. I remember just being very sad about it.
Why?
Because I liked him so much as a person. I respected him so much as an actor. I thought he had brought so much heart to the office, to the show, and I was really nervous about how that void was going to be filled. Not only, you know, as his acting abilities, but also as he was just a good guy.
Yeah.
You know.
I remember feeling way more emotional about him leaving than even the end of the show.
Oh, really?
I think because I felt like, you know, like a kid when mom and dad leaves or something. It's like, well, now right. What?
Yeah.
And there's actually one of my personal favorite lines was when he proposes to Holly and the rain's coming down and we're getting soaked by all the sprinklers. And he says, we're going to Colorado. And Kevin says, all of us?
Yeah.
And there was just something so sort of beautiful about that.
Right.
And then the realization that no, he was leaving. Yeah.
You know, when you talked about when the show ended in after the ninth season, that was a tough night, especially when Creed started singing. But for me, it was really tough, like months later, after the show had ended, and we generally would go back to work around July or August. That's when it set in that, oh, this is, life's different now, you know, we're not going back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When I sat down with Greg before that last season or moving into the finale, and we started talking about, you know, my life's journey at that point through The Office and Kevin, and my experience was people feeling like they knew me and specifically feeling like I was the guy that they wanted to get a drink with.
Oh.
And I said something to him like, Greg, I can't go into a bar without getting bought multiple drinks.
Uh-huh.
Like they just come to the point I say, no, I'm good, thank you, I gotta stop now, guys.
At least people that call you Kevin, you know that they know you from the show.
Right. You?
Me? When people say, Phyllis, I have to think for a moment, okay, have our paths crossed for a moment? Do I know you? Or... But in reality, I do know them, or they know me because I've been in their bedroom and their living room and their kitchen and before they go to work and as they go to sleep. And so we are a part of our fans' lives, you know?
Absolutely.
But at least you can decipher yours a little better with Kevin and Brian.
That's true. I never thought about that before. Phyllis or Creed or Oscar or... Angela, yeah.
And especially if they say, oh, I saw you at, and I'm thinking, okay, now did I go to school with them or what?
Right. That's actually the most difficult. I have two difficult fan interactions. One is I'll be at a, at a serious place of business, like in a thing and I'm meeting someone, or I have a good friend who's introducing me to a good friend who says like, oh, we've met before, right?
Yeah.
And I immediately go, no, I know we haven't. And I know why you think that we've met before.
Right, right.
But then to say that, you become like, I don't know, douchey.
Right,
you're like,
right.
No, well, I was on a television show, you know, like, so, yeah.
For me, I love all the fan interaction. The hardest part for me is at a funeral. That's really awkward. I've had it happen twice. And I just have to say, you know, I'm here because of this, not, you
right.
know. Or if you're at a wedding and,
yeah.
Because I tend to forget, you know, when I go to a wedding, I go to a wedding because I like the person.
Right.
But other than that, I have no problem with them coming right. up to me.
No, I don't.
Nobody wants to buy me a drink. I don't drink.
But I think it's the specific.
Yeah.
In part, it's the specific character.
Yeah.
Do you remember, I mean, you talked a little bit about it, Creed's last song. Like that's the moment that you remember about the finale and like the it's
over
thing.
Well, the whole finale was, you know, driving out to that ranch out in the middle of nowhere. And it was a total surprise to me. I didn't know Steve was going to come back. And I was, you know, just so thrilled to even see him, let alone having be in the finale. And that was the best, to have a full reunion for the finale.
So you didn't know until you saw him there.
I saw him in the middle of the night getting out of my car, and there he was, you know. And I'm going, oh, my God. It's so great.
Yeah.
I had no idea he was coming back because they hid it in the script. It was not in the script.
I somehow knew the night before.
I don't remember.
I don't remember how, but yeah. Like literally the night before or something like that.
Uh-huh.
It was more like, don't you tell a soul, but, and I don't remember who told me or
it was,
whatever, but yeah, I remember it being
perfect.
Shocking.
What's it, and his line, his talking head about the your children marrying each other.
Yes. Yeah. Well, and just the, that's what she said,
yeah.
Joe.
Yeah.
This is
yeah.
the first thing out of his mouth. Just so perfect. And that's the thing that people don't realize now, like when you watch it on Netflix, at the time it was such a big surprise because
right.
everyone was asking and everyone was saying no.
Right. Because we assumed that it was a no.
No, but I mean, even him and
right.
Greg and
right.
the network didn't know, like nobody knew.
Yeah.
Now when you watch the show, you know, the not as much buildup. What do you think it is about the show that makes people respond so crazy to it now?
Oh, golly. I don't know. People say, they'll come up and they'll say, I just love your, you know, they love this or they love that. And they have a Dwight in their office or they have a Kevin in their office or they have, you know, they have those people so they can relate in some way to the various characters. But it was just different, you know. It took a bold step. And in today's world, it's, some of it may cross the lines. You know, things are so politically correct nowadays. So, and little kids, look at that. We had a six-year-old who was asking us questions who, they were so intelligent and informed and, and to me, six is a little young to be involved in the show. But what do you think?
I don't know. I think it's just about the characters and that it's a workplace comedy, but really it's a family.
Right, a family. Yeah, we become enmeshed in each other's lives. Yeah.
What was it all about for you?
We became family over the 9 years. Nobody really knew each other, but we all grew up together. in a 9-year period. And it was one of the best parts of my life. Yeah. And
yeah. Phyllis, thank you so much for coming in.
Oh, thank you for thinking of me.
I love you so much. I'm so honored.
It's
to call myself your friend, and we share something that will never ever go away.
Exactly. We're heart to heart.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it doesn't get any better than her. Thank you, Phyllis. Thank you, Allison Jones, again, for joining me. And thanks to all of you, once again, for listening. Have a stupendous week this week. Let's have the best week ever. And I will see you next time for another installment of The Office Deep Dive. The Office Deep Dive is hosted and executive produced by me, Brian Baumgartner, alongside our executive producer, Leng Lee. Our senior producer is Tessa Kramer. Our associate producer is Emily Carr. And our assistant editor is Diego Tapia. My main man in the booth is Alec Moore. Our theme song, Bubble and Squeak, performed by my great friend, Creed Bratton. And the episode was mixed by Seth Olansky.
Every family has an origin story, one passed down through the generations. Mine happens to be a mystery involving my great-great-grandmother left behind in Sicily. I'm Joe Piazza, and my new podcast will transport you to the gorgeous island of Sicily as I trace my roots back through a whodunit for the ages. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same 7 questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same 7 questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. 7 questions, limitless answers.
Hello, from Wonder Media Network, I'm Jenny Kaplan, host of Womanica, a daily podcast that introduces you to the fascinating lives women history has forgotten. We've always been intrigued by stories of disappearances, whether it's a fraudster from the 17th century who kept evading the authorities, or a novelist who taunted the Nazis and faked her own death. We all want to know, what happened next? To find out, listen to Womanica on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey there, I'm Dr. Maya Shunker, and I'm a scientist who studies human behavior. Many of us have experienced a moment in our lives that changes everything, that instantly divides our life into a before and an after. On my podcast, A Slight Change of Plans, I talk to people about navigating these moments. Their stories are full of candor and hard-won wisdom. And you'll hear from scientists who teach us how we can be more resilient in the face of change. Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.